Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and it is June 6th. Tonight's subject of discussion is Israel Must Perish. There are not too many people who listen to this program that would have a problem with that phrase. But if you do, well, exactly what do you think needs to be preserved in or about Israel? I'm going to explore this idea tonight with my guest, Bruce Campbell, because Bruce posted an essay last week titled The Morgenthau Plan for Germany, in which he praises Arthur Topham, editor of RadicalPress.com, for taking a hateful book from 1941 with the title Germany Must Perish and rewriting it as Israel Must Perish. A very clever idea, Bruce thinks. Arthur Topham, by the way, was invited to join us, but he's prevented by a work commitment, meaning making a living type work, not his Radical Press free work. You know, most of us are doing a lot of free work, and some people do need to work at making a living once in a while. But I'm so glad that Bruce is here, so hello, Bruce.
Hi, Carolyn. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're here. We're going to have a lot to talk about. We're going to really get into this, I hope. I think it's time. I think this Israel Must Perish idea is very timely, and we shouldn't let it go now that it's been brought up in this very clever way that Arthur did. So your latest article is posted at Veterans Today. So just for our listeners who might not have heard about it yet, they can go there and read it. And is it available anywhere else?
Not that I know of, no. This one's a little hot for most people. Only Veterans Today will carry it.
Well, have you tried to put it somewhere else?
No, I don't try. Sometimes, you know, these things get picked up by other
websites. Yeah,
other web,
okay. Well, but it is actually posted Arthur's site, RadicalPress.com. But yeah. I'm not sure if the whole thing is there or not, but I think I saw it there anyway. All right, so veteranstoday.com, the title is The Morgenthau Plan for Germany.
Well, now, Morgenthau Plan for Israel.
Yeah, sorry. No, the Morgenthau, yeah, oh, you're right. I had that wrong. I typed that up wrong. The Morgenthau Plan for Israel.
That's
sorry.
What made it so clever.
Thank you.
No, that's what
yes, of course. I just, you know, it's easy to get these names confused when you're doing this. So, That's good you pointed that out. Now, you call what Arthur has done with this brilliant, and you call it in your article a weapon we need and a means of describing the menace of Israel. So I'm going to ask right off, how do we use this weapon? Because I'm really anxious to be able to use it.
Well, it just has to be read by people. I don't think people know what the Morgenthau Plan for Germany entailed, just how vicious and sadistic it was, and how radical. It starved to death, according to James Bach, several millions of German civilians. Of course, it started out with this deliberate starvation of over a million German prisoners of war in American and French hands, mostly American. And they were slaughtered by starvation and exposure and disease, kept in open fields from April to December 1945, until approximately 1 million or more, it's at least a million, of these poor guys died under orders from Dwight Eisenhower. And then after that, Eisenhower started the starvation program for Germany proper, for the civilians. And of course, it was in accord with the Morgenthau Plan. And George Patton, when he was in his French headquarters after D-Day. This is D-Day today, isn't it? But Eisenhower and Henry Morgenthau visited Patton at his headquarters in the field, and Patton writes in his papers that this is where Eisenhower proposed to Morgenthau that the Germans be starved and exterminated after the war. So then Morgenthau let Harry Dexter White write this Morgenthau plan for Germany, and it was presented to Roosevelt and Churchill at the Quebec Conference in 44, and then put into effect at Yalta. You know, it was signed off, and then it became policy, and millions of Germans were deliberately starved to death by the Americans.
Exactly right. And you know, Bruce, I did a program right here on VOR late last year on the Morgenthau Plan, and covered all of that. And I think, now let me just say this, that I think, well, you're right that many, many people, all that vast number out there that don't know any, you know, pay attention to this much at all, and we really can't, we're really not talking to them at this moment, but they don't know about it, but a lot of people do. And in fact, this all has been knowledge for a long time. In fact, you know, it's on Wikipedia and even the Bach material and so on. So and yet things don't, we still have Israel, we still have the problem that we have. So what, besides having people read about this, how do we use this idea that Arthur came up with by changing Germany must perish to Israel must perish, just changing the words from German to Jew, etc., etc.? How do we use that as a weapon for our use today?
Well, I think we have to create this awareness of Jewish ways. You know, we have to. I think it's not possible for Americans or most, you know, people to write a book such as Germany Must Perish that Theodore M. Kaufman wrote in 1941. I don't think it's in us. I don't think we can summon up this type of vitriol and this sheer hatred. But we need to. We need to have this ability to describe what Israelis actually do and to people when they have the power. So the first thing to do is to read this. I mean, this is a brilliant thing that Arthur has done, as I've said in the piece, because it uses Jewish writing, and then he turns it around on Jews. So what can the Jews say? I mean, nobody can say it's anti-Jewish because it was written by a Jew. It was just intended for Gentiles.
It was not only written by a Jew. It was read by all kinds of people, including the Roosevelt administration. And as a matter of fact, I think some of Roosevelt's language and that of his vice president, I quoted his vice president the other day on a program, using exactly the same kind of language about Germany that this Kaufman used in his book. So, you know, it's pretty amazing how this took over so quickly. And I'm going to point out in a little bit how this started with Robert Vansittart, a member of the British Foreign Office, earlier than what Kaufman wrote. But I'm not sure that this Kaufman was actually like a part of some kind of a larger plan to do this. If he was tuned into that, or if he just did it on his own, it's kind of hard for me to think that he just did this on his own and it was exactly the same kind of language that was used in these higher echelons of governments of Britain and the United States.
I agree, and I suspect that he had some help. I mean, it's now known that that Kaufman was a very close friend of Sam Rosenman, who was a close advisor to Franklin Roosevelt.
Somebody said that, but I didn't see that it was actually, you know, I couldn't tell that it was that was actually the truth, because they point out that he was like this little guy who was a pacifist, and he was anti-war, and he didn't want to, he was promoting America not getting involved in the war, And then he turned and started attacking Germany in this rather vicious way. But he's
actually, he called for the sterilization.
Yeah.
I mean, he called for the sterilization of American soldiers before he turned it on the Germans. So, I mean, there's some real profound hatred going on with this guy.
He wanted to sterilize the American soldiers?
Yeah, that was his first target.
Oh, that was his first idea, huh?
Yeah, to stop war, you know, because of our warlike ways.
Oh, yeah, in his anti-war stuff. Okay, there you go. So, you know, he and then, that could follow, that he was so anti-war, and then he decided the Germans were warmongers, and so he would do that. But it's all very strange, because it was a much bigger program and propaganda deal than just this guy.
Yeah,
but
well,
his book became a symbol, and it was read by a lot of people, although I'm sure a lot of people found it disgusting. But let me just say here, I don't want to take up all the time here, I seem to be doing that, I think that on how do we use this weapon, that just getting people used to this idea is a big start. So just like you appreciated Arthur coming up with this, Israel must perish. You know, Israel is not carved in stone, but a lot of people think it is. They think, Israel has to exist. Israel has to exist. It's only been there for, 30 years or 40, 50 years, but it has to exist now forever. But it doesn't. And also, you know, we have this nonsense about Iran saying they want to erase Israel from the map, and people get all upset about that. But I think just repeating this mantra, getting people used to it, not letting it drop here, but continuing on with this Israel must perish thing is important for one thing.
Well, it is, because it worked against Germany. You know, obviously, Franklin Roosevelt made it recommended reading for the soldiers going to Europe. Again, it wasn't required, or it wasn't supplied or anything, but it was highly recommended that they read this Germany Must Perish. So I just say that we should turn it around, and the book should be printed, you know, actually made into a book, and made available under Israel Must Perish. Now, as you say, Israel is not necessarily a permanent thing. Now, it was reported today that estimated 70% of Israelis have obtained or have made inquiries about obtaining new passports from the countries from which they came. 70% are considering leaving Israel.
I've been reading about that, and that upsets me, because I've been seeing this writing on the wall for a while. And so, on the one hand, if Israel would perish, so to speak, and then the Jews would all bail out of there, and then they're going to come here and into Europe, and maybe some will go to South America. But none of that is a good idea. So on the one hand, you know, it solves the problem for the Arabs, and that's good. But if this happens, then we have the problem.
Well, it's only fair.
We have a problem.
It's only fair. I mean, we have to deal with them here, one way or the other. But we imposed them on those people, you know, and they did nothing to deserve that. That was all American policy. So it's only fair that we are forced to deal with our own monsters. And, yeah, they'll probably come here. Most of them probably will. I don't doubt it. But we'll have to deal with that. And Israel, you know, Israel is wherever they go. That's their diaspora mentality. So Israel must perish. You know, they have to get this out of their system. We have to get it out of their system somehow. Anyway, but I would say
I have a problem when you say we have to get this out of their system. I don't think, from the one thing, that it's up to us to get it out of their system, and I don't think it can be gotten out of their system. So here we're going to have some different points of view. I have I'm not one that believes that we can live with any large number of Jews, and Jews with all the freedoms that they want to have in our Gentile societies. There is, I had a little note here. this is just the right time to say it. Oh, yeah, I heard E. Michael Jones, whatever, of Culture Wars say today. And, of course, he's Catholic, but that's not the point. He was making the point, though, about the church. He said, Jews are the enemy of the Catholic Church, and that will never change. And I say we need to adopt that teaching for our entire society, recognizing that Jews are an enemy to Gentile society. I mean, that's very strong, and now that's really, people really aren't prepared to hear that or to repeat it, but I think it's true. What do you say to that?
Well, number one, we have to dismantle Israel because they've got several hundred nuclear weapons. And 70% of them are considering leaving. And I think it's going to be more than that as time, now that, you know, they're very concerned about Egypt and they're concerned about the Gaza, the Egyptian side of the Gaza border supposedly being opened up. I guess it's not really, but Israel is becoming very destabilized, and, you know, there have been reports that Netanyahu is going to be assassinated by his own people and Barak also. So anything can happen, but we have still to worry about these stinking nuclear
bombs. Well, you're right. Yeah, those. I mean, you know, if these people, if they think that their state is going to perish, well, they might be persuaded over some period of time here to move somewhere else with lots of guarantees. That's the problem. They will demand so many guarantees in order to leave all that behind.
I would say fine. I would say anything. I would negotiate. I would say whatever you want. You guys got to leave there, and we have to dispose of these nuclear weapons. And I would say anything, because that's how dangerous they are. They are suicidal, possibly. I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's what, you know, I think they might just send off all those bombs, or threaten to.
Yeah, they probably threaten to.
They'll threaten to.
This is a subject for negotiation, though, and it has to be done.
But, who's going to negotiate? Look at our government. They're not in a position to do any negotiating on our behalf.
Yeah, but it's possible that we can have a military takeover, and that would change the whole complexion. I mean, even Obama, with his demand a couple of weeks ago to go back to pre-67 borders, this shook up Israel considerably.
Do you really think so?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. This is the first time a president has ever said such a thing. They have utter contempt for this guy, but still, he said it. And then he went over to England, and he talked to Cameron and to support this the 67 borders thing. So Israel knows that they've been, you know, behaving very badly, and they know that somebody, someday in America, it's possible that somebody here is going to say, so far and no farther. You've gone too far. And they know that they have. And they will back down.
So far, they're back down, but how much will they back down? Because I'm saying, I like this, Israel must perish. I'm not for they'll back down and go back to pre-Netanyahu days.
No, I'm not saying that. I believe Israel must perish. But when we say Israel, I mean, it's the same as Ahmadinejad saying it must vanish from the page of history or whatever, you know, his actual words were. And the Soviet Union has perished, but the country's still there, people are still there. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Israel must perish, and it must be returned to Palestine.
Yeah, but Israel is more connected with the Jewish people as to the what Israel is and what the Jewish people are than something like the Soviet Union.
But we all know it's a pipe dream. It's a Khazarian pipe dream. It means nothing. It's a total scam. And in New York City is probably more sacred to these people, and Miami Beach and Hollywood are probably more sacred to these people than Tel Aviv, because that's not a fun place to live. They don't want to live there. A lot of them got scammed into going there in the first place, and they'd love to get the heck out of there. So I think we can persuade them to leave and leave those stinking bombs where they are, and we take care of them. I think that's the whole thing we have to think about is
and then what are we going to owe these people? And you say it doesn't matter what we owe them. because we have to defuse this situation. Well, I can see that because, you know, nuclear war is no joke. So, you know, this is nothing to mess around with.
I mean, we could have laughed it off until this Fukushima thing. Now we realize just how deadly radiation is.
Well, you know, we can very easily end up, even if all this went, you know, in the best way possible, we could easily end up with a President Netanyahu in the United States of America, or somebody like him. You know, this is what's going to happen.
Well, again, Israel must perish. You know, if we can make it perish in Palestine, we can make it perish here too. But first things first, we got to get them out of there, because that's just a cancer. It's got to go. They got to go, and they know it. And there's 70% of them considering leaving. That's today.
Maybe, yeah, so they're
maybe next week
just
it'll
getting.
Be 80%.
They're just getting. What it turns me off. They're just getting extra passports for insurance. You know, these people, they want to save themselves no matter what. They're looking out for every contingency so that they can come out just fine. You see, that doesn't mean that it's actually going to happen, but and it worries me because I just, these people are such a problem in the world. They're just a problem.
Well, yes, they are. They poison the Middle East with depleted uranium. We've done it. I mean, I want to talk also about America, because America is a real problem. Not just Israel, not just the Jews. And maybe the Jews have made America a big problem, but there's also an American sadistic tendency, a very cruel tendency. And the Jews are afraid of America. They've always thought that Americans were much more dangerous to them than Germans ever were. The Germany was kind of like a Jewish paradise before the tough guys took over. But they're really afraid of Americans. And, I mean, we got to talk about just how nasty and ugly and vicious America has been to the world.
Well, it is. But, you know, it followed, well, in its own sphere, it was vicious in many ways from the start. But then so was everybody. But I also want to add to that England was doing all this before America did it, and America has just followed along now with England, and now has become greater than England now, certainly. But England started this, and Vansittart, Lord Robert Vansittart, was the first one who was talking about, or at least that I know of. He wasn't the first one, probably, but that was well known. That was such a Germanophobe, and was talking so terribly, just exactly like this book by Kaufman about Germany in the 30s. And a lot of this stuff was coming out of England, and it wasn't just war propaganda. It was because they felt so, they didn't want any competition from Germany, and they had decided in the 1880s that Germany was their target, and they were going to get rid of it. And again, they're not going to get rid of it to actually, you know, get rid of every German on earth, or get rid of the name of the country, but they were going to decimate Germany as a power, and they have managed to do that. And they started it, and then the United States under, you know, the Jews were a part of that within England, and then the United States and its Jew-friendly politicians and leaders, especially Roosevelt, went along with all of that, and Wilson was very influenced by Jews also. So, you know, all this has been like a three-way thing in my mind: the English, the Jews, and then the Americans came into it.
Yes.
How are they going to correct it, America?
Well, we have to come to terms with what we are and what we've done to people. I mean, let's you know, when we look at the extermination of the Indians, and then the vicious assault on the southern states, and then the second part of the extermination of the Indians, and then the Philippines deal, we put...
Yeah, but who was behind that, Bruce? Besides, you can't just say America.
Well, I can. It is America that has done this. You know, before, I mean, it wasn't the Jews exterminating the Indians, and I know the Jews were involved in the Civil War, obviously, but Americans are a cruel and sadistic bunch of people. You can see it today in the police. You can see it in the prison system. You can see it in the way we behave in Iraq and Afghanistan. You can see it.
You find cruel.
Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
You can see it at Abu Ghraib. I mean, can you imagine Americans doing those things at Abu Ghraib?
You know, Americans have power. They have power. And there are an awful lot of people in the world who, if they had that power, they would be doing the same and maybe worse. So, you know, it really has to do with how much power you can bring together for yourself. And when you have this power, a lot of concerns fall away, and you're no longer careful.
Well, we had power, and I was in the Rhodesian Security Forces, and we had power.
Yeah.
But we never abused that power the way Americans abuse it every place they go.
Okay, well, I won't really argue with that. We've already come to the halfway point, so let's take our break, and we'll be back with you, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Let's turn our attention to that of Greece, where public anger is mounting over stricter austerity measures the government's promised to implement so it can get its hands on more EU aid. European leaders have approved the next payment in its bailout for Athens, bidding to save the country and the euro from a default. But as RT's Daniel Bushell has been finding out, those who are to pay the price of the new aid package could soon be taken to the streets.
The euro's dead. Long live Germany, says top lawyer Markus Kerber. He's suing the German government to stop it bailing out bankrupt neighbours.
You cannot save the euro by saving Greece. But on the contrary, you have to get rid of Greece. Greece is no longer a worthy candidate, no longer a worthy member of the European Monetary Union.
The nations labelled in derision by some as the pigs of Europe, Portugal, Ireland, Greece and Spain, must drop the currency now, before they drag down other members, warns Kerber. Although Athens last year raised the pension age to 65 and curbed early retirement, other countries believe that Greek workers work less. We'll bail you out a second time, says Chancellor Merkel. But if you want cash in future, you must work longer.
We can't have a common currency where some get lots of vacation time and others very little. That won't work in the long term.
The statement caused uproar in Greece, but they're not happy in the EU's cash capital, Frankfurt, either, believing the Greeks have had it too easy.
Of course, if we are going to work till 67, it's not possible to declare why other people should go with 60 or 59.
Which are certainly not responsible for the debts and the deficits run in Portugal, Greece, in the pig states.
Raise the age when the Greek people retire. All Greek people, well, we have to work long as well.
Germans are at boiling point. Anger which could spill out onto the streets, say some experts.
On the other hand, if the problems with the euro become more and more, bigger and bigger, higher and higher, then it is also not excluded that German people go on the street because they say, okay, we don't want to pay anymore.
The powerful Greens are now suing Merkel's government, claiming it hid facts about bailouts from the public.
People in Germany ask you, do we have to pay this? And so we have to give answers, and the answers we don't get from our government.
Even the ruling party is revolting. Klaus-Peter Wilsch is fighting all rescues, since he argues leaving the Eurozone is in the interests of the struggling countries.
They should take the chance to say, okay, we get out, we solve our problems, we will have our debt restored.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here with Bruce Campbell as my guest, and we have been talking about Israel Must Perish, an idea that comes from the book by Theodore Kaufmann back in 1941, Germany Must Perish. Now, if we want to put Israel in the place of Germany in the way that Arthur did in this book that you wrote about, let's look at the treatment that was given to the Germans, which you already mentioned that, by Eisenhower, and with the approval of the, or actually it was a part of the Morgenthau Plan. Some of this treatment now, they didn't sterilize the Germans, but they did do everything in their ability without actually outright murdering them to cause them to die. And one thing that they didn't do for the Germans that was in the Morgenthau Plan was not to give them any medical care or treatment. Do you think we should do that to the how would we get the American government to treat Israel in such a way that they would weaken Israel and the Israelis enough? Like, how about no medical care treatment?
Well, again, as I've told a lot of my friends, I have said that we cannot, you know, we Gentiles or whatever you want to call us, we don't have this ruthless, cruel and sadistic streak in us the way that they do in their programs.
Well, the Americans had that cruel and sadistic streak toward the Germans, and they instructed the soldiers to follow the orders, and they did, even though many of them didn't like doing
yes,
it.
Yes, I agree with that 100%. But we cannot, we're not able to articulate this cruelty when it comes to Jews. So my only purpose is to suggest a starvation program. Not that we're going to blockade Israel and starve them to death. I lived in Rhodesia, and we were starved out. We had a blockade. I'm not proposing this. I'm just saying, all aid, obviously, to Israel and every other country should be stopped. Not that that's going to stop Israel. But now that Obama has made this demand to go back to their 67 borders, this is a cold shower for these people. They have never experienced this thing from an American president. So we have to encourage Obama to stay strong against these guys. But
well, didn't Obama back down after he said that?
No.
He said, "Oh well, what I meant was that's just a starting point, and then we'll go from there."
Well, he got no support from it. You know, his party was applauding Netanyahu. He got no support, but the American people have to support him. That's what I'm saying.
All right, that's a good point, because you have said that Congress, and we know this, I agree with you here, Congress, we need to get rid of Congress. So, you know, it's funny, kind of interesting that what Hitler, when he came into power, and even before he came into power, he was talking about how parliament, the German parliament, the Reichstag, was such a worthless a body. And he didn't want the Germany to continue to be ruled by this body that could never decide on anything and was, you know, bought off all the time. And now we have the same thing here in the United States. And I agree. Now, wouldn't that be one point? If we want to get certain things done, we need to get rid of Congress.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think we have to go the other way. I'd say we have to go back to the Articles of Confederation, which had only a Congress. It did not have a president. You know, under those eight years of the Articles of Confederation before Washington became president, there was no federal government. And that's what we have to go back to, is the Articles of Confederation or something, you know, like that. The Congress should be, if we're going to have politicians, that's where they belong, in the Congress, not in the executive and not in the Supreme Court. There's no check and balance on the Supreme Court.
Well, how do we get a Congress now that would not be part of, you know, would not be going along with special interests. How do we see that wasn't going on then like it is now?
Well, we have to outlaw lobbying, outlaw any emoluments or any
Congress has to outlaw that, right?
Exactly.
We have to give Congress a vote for these things, and they're in the going in the absolutely opposite direction.
True, but I mean, this is how it would have to be done. That's all I'm saying. We have to get rid of the whole president thing. The president thing is a cancer on us. The Supreme Court is a cancer on us. There's no check and balance in the Supreme Court. So the Congress is the way to, the senators have to be appointed by the state legislatures, just like before the 17th Amendment, and the congressmen have to be voted on by the people. So there has to be a contract between the states and the people and get some kind of order. And all the Congress really has to do for us is supply debt-free currency. This is the whole reason for being for Congress in the American system, should be to supply us with debt-free currency. That would take care of the whole Jewish problem, which is the Federal Reserve and the Rothschild guys that run our government because of debt.
That's true. Bruce, do you favor nationalism?
Well, yes, I'm a nationalist. I'm a nationalist. I wrote a book about it, and I said that we have to reestablish our nationalism. I believe every country should be nationalistic and interested in its own welfare and people. But we shouldn't be, you know, the other choice is internationalist.
Yes.
So I believe in nationalism, not internationalism. But I do believe in good relations with everybody, except, you know, aggressors.
Well, how do we... And, of course, you see America as the worst aggressor.
It's the worst aggressor of all. The worst in history.
Yeah, so since we're such an aggressor, internationalist nation now, and I hesitate to even call us a nation, but we're more like a huge state, how do we get back to nationalism?
Well, it's going to take a constitutional convention. You know, all the conservatives, oh my God, we can't have a constitutional convention because who knows what we'll get. Well, look what we've got. We have to scrap this constitution, which was a fraud upon the people. It was done in secrecy. Those guys went into Philadelphia to to modify the Articles of Confederation, and instead they scrapped it and gave us this constitution, which is a blueprint for empire. Patrick Henry took one look at it and said, this is an empire. This is not what we fought for. I mean, we don't want a strong federal government. We don't want any federal government. We want the state governments. They can do whatever they want and have relations with other states.
Very many people who would support that. I mean, that people just can't even comprehend such a thing in this day and age. So who is it that it's not the Constitution Party? What party, is there a party that you would support or that you feel is closest to what you think?
No, there's no party. I don't even believe in parties. I think party is the whole problem. How do we get two parties?
Well, how do we organize in order to, say, demand a constitutional convention and throw out our constitution and start all over again? This doesn't seem doable.
Well, as Jesse Ventura has said many, many times, he said, you got to stop voting for anybody in the Democrat or Republican Party. That's the first step. I mean, to me, voting is a total fraud. I don't believe that the politicians are going to save us. But if we get rid of these political parties by simply not voting for them, not pretending that they're okay, they're not okay. They're a cancer on us.
Okay, so there's two issues for you. There's the Jews on the one hand, and Israel and all that, and then there's America and our politics. And our internal politics, which really doesn't have a whole lot to do with the Jews, that is very important to you. Now, where does this? You earlier when I had you on, you were talking about this starting something that I was really liked called what is it?
Defense against Jewish aggression.
Yes, DAJA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we got to be well-rounded. You know, I can't, I don't, personally, I hate to criticize Jews because it gives them attention, which they crave. It makes mm-hmm. us think about them. I mean, we have to, but I hate to admit it. You know, I hate to do it because it gives them too much credit.
Well, I just want to say that I really agree with you on that. I like hearing you say that because I have said many times that these people who would spend all their time sending out everything that's written on the internet about Jews to all the rest of us as though we need to want to read all this and know all this. I don't want to hear about Jews. I want to hear about us and what we're going to do. So I'm with you there.
Yeah, back in 79, I remember a guy named Norman Dodd. He worked for the Wall Street bank, and just before the depression or before the crash, and Henry Morgenthau Sr. Came into the brokerage and asked to have all his securities transferred into treasury bonds. He knew that the crash was coming, and Norman Dodd did this for him, and it saved him several $1 million. Of course, he's the father of this clown, Henry Morgenthau Jr., who gave us the Morgenthau Plan. He considered his son a dope. He said he was a nincompoop. But I interviewed Norman Dodd one time, and I asked him, what do you think? And he said, well, I'll tell you what I think. I said, we have overdiagnosed the problem. Overdiagnosed the problem. I said, wow. Yes, we know enough. We don't need to know any more about these people. Well, I said, yes. Okay, I see what you're saying there. And we have overdiagnosed the problem. We know enough. We don't need to know any more about the Jews. We know what they are.
That's right.
We know. You know, let's work on a solution now. No more ain't it awful. No more of this complaining about these people and giving them power over us. Let's treat them with contempt. Tell them that they deserve the Morgenthau Plan for Israel. Israel must perish. Get your alternate passports. Go where the hell you want to go, but get out of that place and leave the bombs behind, and we'll deal with them. And then we'll deal with you. But first thing, get out of there, or else you're going to kill us all and get yourself killed in the process. So we got to be adults. They're like children. They're like mean little children that never give up whining and demanding until they get what they want. Well, we got to be adults. You know, we got to be the adults of this deal. And we can't.
But yeah, when we say we, well, now, you know, here's the thing that I'm all for it. But how do we get there to be a we that's really worth anything? Because let's talk for just a second about the comments to your article. I was going to bring that up. What do you think about those comments? You think people there weren't as many as there should have been? And do you think that people get it? Well, I read them all, and I think that there are only a few people that get it, and there's a lot of talk that goes around and around on peripheral issues.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it goes off in different directions, and it's just out of control. So, I mean, I don't pay that much attention to the comments anymore.
Just judging, you know, what impact it has on these people who comment at Veterans Today, they don't seem to be able to really put their, you know, embrace it very well.
Some of them are pretty sharp, but I think what I've been told by Veterans Today is that a lot of people in Washington and read this thing. Read this Veterans Today. I don't know why, but they do.
There's a lot there. It's just about everything. You know, to me, Veterans Today has something for everybody. I mean, it's everything from A to Z, don't you think, on the positions?
Yeah, and I'm the firebrand. I'm the one that, you know, does the hardcore stuff. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Yeah.
But how do we get a bigger we?
Or even a we that's actually organized without a party, you know? I mean...
Well, that's why I'm promoting this party. I'm considering Daja as a defense against Jewish aggression as a political party, not to vote for anybody. I don't want any more, you know, people voting.
Yeah.
But we have to have a means of communication. We have to have a way to identify with each other. And, I mean, you're not going to get any Jews in defense against Jewish aggression. I mean, that's a pretty good...
Well, you might.
That's a pretty good idea.
You might. Because they want to get in everywhere. But, you know, now here's the thing then. I think you've got two good things that you've written about. This defense against choice aggression, I've been hoping to see you actually go with that, you know, and start something with it. And then Israel Must Perish goes right along with it. So these are two good things that can work together to get something started.
Yeah, and we have to make it interesting and somewhat glamorous and entertaining. You know, you got to entertain. So we got to put it into interesting terms for the guy on the street. And
well, how have you worked on this? I mean, have you got any ideas or have you got any people involved or what is the way forward with this?
Honestly, the way forward is a movie. You got to entertain, and I'm a screenwriter, so I write about this. You know, I write these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got these things. I've got interesting and very fascinating things that I can, but it needs support. So I mean, I keep doing this stuff. I keep putting this stuff out, and I have screenplays that I'll be happy to send you, and you would probably find them quite good.
Oh, but yeah, I've read about your screenplays. Well, Don't you think it needs to have a website of its own or something like that to focus around?
Oh, I'm sure it does. I just don't know how to do it. I mean, I need some help on that.
Yeah, well, we all do. I think we should encourage people who are interested in this to write to you and or write to me, and you and I can keep in contact, and anybody else who's involved in this with you. And mm-hmm. and try to get something building up around all this.
Yeah, let's kind of recap and realize that things are happening. I mean, you and I probably don't like Barack Obama, but we gotta acknowledge what the heck he did the other day with Netanyahu. And yet,
well,
Netanyahu,
it hasn't made that big impression on me, but then I have to admit I don't follow this as closely as you probably do because I'm in that place where I'm so sick of these people, and I just look at it all superficially and then go on to my other work. But so you go ahead now and talk, say what you want about this.
Well, I just think it's extremely significant, and this is an unlikely guy to do something like this. I do suspect, because he is Zbigniew Brzezinski's protege, that his 67 borders thing is very provocative, but it sounds very much like Zbigniew Brzezinski. It sounds like an intelligence operation against Israel, because he, you know, Brzezinski hates him.
Oh, he does.
And they hate him. Oh yeah, and he's, okay. You know, he's Polish. They don't like the Poles. Don't like the Jews, and the Jews don't like the Poles. So, and Brzezinski's a tough guy. I don't care for the guy. But the enemy of my enemy, like I wrote in that piece, whether it's Obama or Brzezinski, we got to get rid of Israel. And these guys are capable of doing that with a little military help, you know. You remember that captain, that Marine captain that jumped up on the Israeli tank by the airport in Beirut, in West Beirut, when they were going to go blast Arafat and the other guys? And that Marine captain jumped up on the lead Israeli tank and put a 45 against the commander's head and said, if you could take one more inch forward, you're going to have your brains decorating this tank. And they turned around and left. That's all you need with these guys. And mm-hmm. the U.S. military is quite possibly going to be our friends on this deal. You know about Alan Sobrowski and the War College and the things that are circulating around the military now. They know that the Jews did 9/11. Everybody knows it.
So, yeah, see, I have a little problem. I'm never sure whether people are real or whether they're,
Let's pretend they are.
All
right. Let's treat them as if they're real. I mean, I'll treat Obama with respect for going up against Netanyahu. Mm-hmm. And he was disgraced. You know, this little creep from Israel came over here and lectured him right in the White House. And Obama sat there and stared at him balefully. And then... Mm-hmm. Then Obama leaves, you know, goes overseas and lets Netanyahu speak to the Congress. And all these sycophants jump up and down, not 29 times. I mean, It was quite interesting to show how useless the U.S. Congress is, and what a horrible place to be.
Yeah.
That I think that helps us. I think we just have to use this, and let's capitalize on it.
Well, Bruce, I think that you should get out front, because I think a lot of people read your stuff. They've known of you for quite a while, and I think a lot of people are waiting to see, you know, hoping you're going to do something, waiting to see what you're going to do, and they'll join in. So I think you need to find a way to get this all going. And I think you'll find a lot of help.
Okay. Well, I'm ready to go.
Well,
you know,
great.
I need some help. That's all. Need some help.
Okay. So what would be some of the first steps?
Well, the first thing I think is the political party, Defense Against Jewish Aggression. I mean, we have to become aggressive ourselves in our own defense.
This
is the first step to start, you know.
All right, I'll join. Does it need money? I mean, everything needs money, and people are really strapped with all the places they'd like to donate. But I think it would have to be, you said you don't want it to be a political party, but it had to be an organization.
It would be a political party, but it wouldn't vote for anybody. It wouldn't send anybody to Washington.
Oh, okay. It'll be a political party.
Yeah.
All right.
It would be anti-voting political party. You know, probably the biggest political party in the country because what is the result now in the polls? I mean, I think more people don't vote than do vote. So,
oh heck, in San Antonio, I'll just throw this in here. They had a mayoral and council elections around here, and in San Antonio they had a 7% turnout, and in this little town where I live, there were nine people went and voted out of like a little over 2,000 that could vote, or maybe it was 16 people or something like that.
Well, but that's very encouraging.
So, because, you know, I thought that's really good because nobody is voting.
That's a wonderful, that's what we need right there. And,
right.
And those are our people. You know, we'd have a lot of people in that because they're not voting for a reason. They're sick and tired of this charade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I mean, one thing at a time, but we'd have a platform of Israel must perish, you know, that's a good one. Defense against Jewish aggression, we've got a lot of things to present. And, you
that's
know, it's going to snap a lot of minds, but a lot of people are ready for this, too. This is a big country, and there's a lot of people that are ready for this message.
They're really ready. There's a lot of them that are really ready, and then the rest will have to be persuaded. And I think once it has to get out there, and we have to say these things unashamedly and without apology and without backstepping and without saying, well, but you know this or that. You know, we just have to come out with it. And I think then people are more ready to say, well, heck, okay. You know, then as long as it continues to be kind of, like, oh, well, this is sort of a shameful thing to say, then people aren't willing to go along with it. People are really followers, aren't they? I mean, most people just want to follow. Well,
I think
that's just natural. Most people...
I'd like to follow. I don't know anybody to follow.
Well,
but I'd like to follow, too.
I would, too.
Here's our economic program. I mean, no more taxes and debt-free currency. In other words, the Congress has to nationalize the Federal Reserve. And there'll be no more private banking issuing currency. It would only be done by the Congress. And there would be no debt involved. So mm-hmm. there would be no interest.
Mm-hmm.
It would be issued, like Bill Still says, maybe $100,000, capitalized $100,000 per capita in this country. And it would be, you know, several, I don't know how many trillions of dollars that would be. That's how much we'd have to spend. We have to copy Hitler's economic miracle. He turned that country around in about a year and a half. And
okay.
That's what we can
now
do, too.
Now, let me say, we've got 2 minutes left now, 1 minute. Let me say this. Can't there be a rule, no Jews in defense against Jewish aggression? I don't think we can allow any Jews, even if they are so-called good Jews. What do you think?
I agree completely. We have to disfranchise Jews from the positions of influence and power, totally.
Yes.
Exactly what Germany did. We have to do exactly the same thing. We have to defend ourselves against Jewish aggression, and this is how we go about it.
Well, that sounds very good to me. Boy, I think that's great. I'm ready to go.
Okay.
We'll continue with this. We'll see what kind of feedback we get from it, and we'll continue talking about it. And so, let me see. I've got, until the music starts, Bruce, I'm going to let you say what you want to say.
There it is.
Okay.
I think that's it that I want to say.
All right, Bruce Campbell, thank you so very much. Read his articles on Veterans Today, and look for more to come. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. See you next week.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. Time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.